Radio Prague News. A high-ranking police officer has presented evidence that organized crime groups are influencing the state administration. The Czech Republic will send 5 million crowns in aid to Indonesia. And river levels around the country have begun to recede, but meteorologists are expecting more rain in the next few days. A high-ranking police officer has presented evidence that organized crime groups are influencing the state administration. Speaking before Parliament's Arms and Defence Committee, the head of the Czech police's elite organized crime unit, Jan Kubice, said on Monday that politicians and organized crime groups are trying to interfere in three serious cases that his unit is currently working on. Mr. Kubice presented evidence to the committee members during a closed session on Monday afternoon. The Czech Republic will send neither rescue teams nor humanitarian aid to earthquake-stricken Indonesia. The government has released 5 million crowns, or around $225,000, in financial aid instead, the foreign ministry announced on Monday. Saturday's 7.6 magnitude earthquake on the island of Java has claimed more than 5,000 lives. An estimated 20,000 people are injured and hundreds of thousands are displaced. Residents of Prague's Dolní Černošice district have been cut off from the rest of the world after continuous rain flooded the only road that connects them to the city. Levels of the nearby Berounka River have begun to recede, but meteorologists say more heavy rain is expected in the next few days. The situation in most parts of the country that were also flooded this weekend has also calmed. The heavy rain has resulted in dozens of millions of crowns in damage. Some 2,000 Czechs are believed to die every year from illnesses resulting from passive smoking, the director of the Czech Coalition Against Tobacco, Kateřina Langrová, said on Monday, ahead of World No Tobacco Day, which is marked every year on March the 31st by tobacco control advocates around the globe. This year, Czech tobacco control advocates hope to persuade non-smokers to fight against passive smoking. And a group of Czech filmmakers have withdrawn their productions from an international film festival in Moravia in protest at Parliament's recent failure to overturn a presidential veto of higher support for the film industry. Films such as Restart, directed by Julius Shevchik, Shark in the Head by Maria Procházková, or Still Living, directed by Pavel Goebel, have been taken out of competition at the prestigious 46th Zlín International Film Festival for Children and the Youth, which was launched on Monday and runs until Saturday. Andita Asiru, and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague. I'm Rob Cameron. Coming up in today's programme, as parties enter the final stretch before the weekend's parliamentary elections, leaders of the two main parties meet in a live TV debate. Doctors and health workers demonstrate in the centre of Prague. We hear why they're unhappy with the present centre-left government. And 85 years since the Czech writer Karel Čapek invented the robot. Stay tuned. The Czech Republic is now days away from a general election that will decide the country's next government, in all likelihood led either by these social democrats that have ruled for the last 8 years, or their rivals, the right-of-centre civic democrats. The race is far from decided, and the final opinion polls have predicted opposite results, one giving the social democrats a slight edge, the other predicted a decisive civic democrat victory. So televised debates between the party's two leaders, Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek and opposition leader Mirek Topolánek, could still have an impact. Jan Wellinger joins me in the studio. Jan, how would you characterize these debates?
Well, Rob, I guess first and foremost, this is one of only a few opportunities that we've really had to see Mirek Topolánek face off against the Prime Minister. Recently, both have expressed a certain amount of aversion to each other in the press, but now we've got a chance to see them square off on issues like corruption, healthcare, the future of the country. And obviously, a debate like this can be very important for potential voters. At times on Sunday, neither man pulled his punches.
Od Bílé hory se v téhle zemi nekradlo nikdy tolik jako za vlád ODS.
Tak jak se chová urážlivý Jiří Paroubek ke mně, tak se bude chovat k vám, když vyhraje tyhle ty volby. To je třeba vidět.
But can we say, Jan, with absolute certainty that either Mr. Topolánek or Mr. Paroubek will be the next prime minister?
I think we can say that it's very, very likely. And it was certainly a motivation for Czech TV, as well as other broadcasters this week, to present the two men head-to-head, not alongside the leaders of some of the other smaller parties. It may be somewhat slightly misleading. The elections aren't only about Topolánek and Paroubek. Here's political analyst Tomáš Lebeda.
Většinou tam, kde se očekává, že jeden ze dvou lídrů se může stát tím vrcholným představitelem.
Such a debate format is used when one of two political leaders is largely expected to be the next prime minister. Here, there are two strong parties, one on the political left and one on the right, and most ideological battles are fought between the two. That doesn't mean the elections are only about Mr. Paroubek or Mr. Topolánek. They aren't. The debate was also useful in presenting either man as a prime minister and could have an impact on undecided voters gravitating between some of the smaller parties or the civic or social democrats.
And how did Mr. Paroubek and Mr. Topolánek actually come across, Jan?
Well, following the debate, Rob, many analysts did suggest that they toned down some of the angry rhetoric from the last time they faced. I think for the most part, they probably each made a certain amount of headway among some voters, depending on personal preference and different styles. Mr. Paroubek, of course, is generally considered to be the type of man who goes on the offensive, to the point of being sometimes vulgar, considered too aggressive. Mr. Topolánek, on the other hand, often tries to appear very statesmanlike, but is also criticized for not always being able to keep his emotions under wraps. There was this recent incident in which he refused to shake hands with Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek. And their personalities, says analyst Lubomír Kopečko, to an extent have been echoed in their party's campaigns.
Když se podíváte třeba na styl kampaně, kterou zvolila v letošních volbách především Česká strana.
I think that the Social Democrats campaign has been an aggressive and negative one, and it's logical to a certain extent that its leader has to copy that. On the other hand, the Civic Democrats have tried to present themselves as more decent, and that was reflected somewhat even in the debate yesterday.
Je to zase odraz toho, jak se snaží obecně prezentovat.
Right, well, Jan, will you watch the debate? Who got the upper hand?
It's not really clear that either man got the upper hand. Both were fairly strong in the debate, showed their mettle, and most importantly of all, did not lose their nerve. I think that that's something we're perhaps going to see over the next two debates, where hopefully issues will come more to the forefront.
Right, we'll just have to wait and see. Results expected on Saturday afternoon. Jan Wellinger, thank you very much. Healthcare has emerged as one of the major issues in this election campaign, not least because of the vocal protests of many Czech health workers against the recent reforms launched by Health Minister David Rath. A week of unrest staged by healthcare professionals drew to a close on Friday with a demonstration and march through the streets of Prague. Kristy Ironside was there.
Organizers of the protest handed out stickers that read, "I will not be the guinea pig of Dr. Rath," and led a donkey symbolizing the health minister through the city streets. Czech health workers were protesting what they see as a return to a centralized system of healthcare provision, including tighter limits on the types of treatment covered by health insurance. Jakub Bucher, a representative of the General Practitioners Association, worries about what that means for Czech patients.
If you are out of this limit, you must pay all these bills yourself. It's only mathematic operator. So the limit is some number, more you pay, and nobody want to know if it was necessary or not. So this is the first big problem, I think.
The protest came days after Minister Rath and the Social Democrats, together with the Communists, pushed through a law that would see the conversion of 146 hospitals into non-profit institutions in coming years, and would deny health insurance contracts to hospitals that refused to cooperate. Rath said he's trying to fix a system plagued by deficits and wasted resources. But Dr. David Marks, a pediatrician and faculty member at Charles University, sees the recent reforms as politically rather than socially motivated.
The healthcare policy needs to be prepared in a scientific way, not in a clearly political way. And the final goal of Dr. Rath to centralize healthcare provision will lead to a complete nationalization of the secondary healthcare system of hospitals. And we are afraid that the next steps after the elections, if the Social Democrats would win, would be the same tendency to centralize and to empower the system to the state, even in primary health care.
Many of the protesters said that Friday's event represented the culmination of over a decade of dissatisfaction with consecutive governments' mismanagement of the health care sector, and was not intended as a political statement in spite of the fact that it was held 1 week before the election. However, not all Czech medical organizations took part in the protests, nor do all see Rath's reforms as potentially detrimental to the healthcare system. Instead, some view the reforms as promoting standardized and equitable provision of health services. For his part, Minister Rath dismissed the doctors' week of unrest as a concealed part of the Civic Democrats' political campaign and questioned the intentions behind their concerns.
Tato stávka, demonstrace tedy těch nejbohatších, je poněkud výsměchem.
This strike, this demonstration staged by the richest in society, is to a certain extent an insult to citizens of this country who have to live on an average salary or a lower than average salary. Because just before an election, these are really the very richest people who are demonstrating on our streets and squares.
Demonstrují skutečně ti nejbohatší.
Whether or not the organizers of Friday's demonstration were politically motivated, this weekend's elections will decide the fate of Minister Rath's reforms.
Kristi Einside there with that report. You're listening to Radio Prague. Now, from RTD2 to The Terminator, robots are a common theme in modern fiction, but not many people realise that the robot was born in Prague exactly 85 years ago. To celebrate its birthday, a project at the University of Cambridge in England examines the life of robots and their Czech creator. Brian Sabin reports.
Thanks, Rob. I'll tell you, out on the streets, most Czechs can tell you who made the term robot famous.
Karel Čapek?
Yes, Karel Čapek.
Robot, Karel Čapek.
Karel Čapek? Karel Čapek.
Karel Čapek, Czech writer.
Karel Čapek was one of the great writers of interwar Czechoslovakia. His play R.U.R., Rossum's Universal Robots, coined the term to describe human-like androids that perform mundane, repetitive labor. In 1921, the play opened here in Prague and introduced the robot to the world. Now, Cambridge University's robot project explores their life, their history, and what they say about us. I got a hold of organizer Kathleen Richardson and asked her just what inspired her project.
You know, going back to the original play and finding out about the original robots, I was kind of inspired to put on the play. And then I thought, well, if I'm going to put on the play, also have an exhibition and get speakers in and have films and use all these different mediums, really, to explore the question about what makes us human.
What sort of stuff do you have on display at your exhibition?
The exhibition begins by looking at the first robots, which not a lot of people know were never mechanical, but in a literal sense, only in a metaphorical sense. And what happened was in the 20s, it was other artists that began giving the robots its metallic and its mechanical form. The idea of a mechanical robot became so popular, Čapek issued a public reaction against this. He said this is a horror, that the themes of his play have been re-represented in the kind of ways that they were. So he must have felt that he'd created a Frankenstein's monster back in the 30s.
What has the response been so far to this display?
We've had a lot of interest, actually. I mean, with the whole project, we've come to think of robots in a kind of a subcultural way, or, you know, as characters in Star Wars. So really what I wanted to do with the whole project again was try and reclaim a kind of robot as not only a technological object and an entertainment one, but as a political object to think with, really, as Čapek intended it.
How is the robot a political object?
Well, it was developed at the height of the kind of labor movements in the 20s, when clearly themes of work and people's place within the working system was very much prominent. And actually, Čapek and his brother Joseph is the one actually who gave him the idea of the robot. They wrote a play in 1908 called The System. It was like the source of their inspiration for the robot. And in it, there's a character in it who says, you know, I want to turn the worker into machine. I want to get rid of his camaraderie and his feelings of compassion, because I don't need those things in my factory. So it's very much inspired by the whole issues of work and how we treat each other, you know, in a kind of modern system of work.
And that was Kathleen Richardson, organiser of the Robot Project at Cambridge University. And she was speaking there to Brian Sabin, who is very, very human indeed. You're listening to Radio Prague. It's time now for all the sports news, and that's brought to you by Ian Willoughby.
Thanks, Rob. The Czech Republic's football team have continued their World Cup preparations with a warm-up match against Saudi Arabia in Innsbruck. Milan Baroš scored his first international goal since last September to put the Czechs in front early in Friday's game, before Marek Jankulovski scored a penalty in the dying minutes to make it 2-0. It may have been a friendly, but the Saudis didn't pull any punches, says Jankulovski.
It was pretty tough, especially at the beginning when they really got stuck in. The referee didn't blow so often and we took a few kicks, but I think the game really calmed down in the second half. You go on the pitch to play football, not to make war.
The Czechs' next World Cup warm-up is against Costa Rica in Jablonec on Tuesday. They'll be without midfielder Tomáš Rosický for that game. He's pulled a muscle. It's not yet clear whether he'll return for the final pre-Germany friendly against Trinidad and Tobago in Prague next Saturday. Karel Poborský is very likely to be the only player at the World Cup who ended the league season in his country's second division. He moved to Česká Budějovice, a club he part owns, after being kicked out of Sparta Prague. But if Poborský, who is 34, stays at Česká Budějovice, he'll be back in the Czech top flight next season. The club has just secured the second promotion spot. Kladno finished top. Decathlete Roman Schäberle normally does very well at Gützes in Austria. Indeed, it was there that he set his world decathlon record. But Schäberle will be happy to forget Gützes 2006, after he was forced to pull out after just three disciplines due to a leg injury. It was only the second time in his career that the Olympic champion failed to complete a competition. Schäberle said his main priority this season is the European Championships, and he needs to stay fit. Finally, Nymburk have won their third Czech basketball title in a row. A 98-76 win over Kunín on Sunday made it 4-1 to Nymburk in the best-of-seven final series. That's all the sport for today.
And rounding off this programme, it's One-on-One, and that's brought to you by Jan Wellinger.
In today's One-on-One, my guest is Czech restorer and professor at the University of Pardubice, Petr Justa, involved in important historic conservation projects in both the Czech Republic and abroad. Recently, Petr Justa returned from New Orleans, where he and fellow specialists worked to assess the level of damage to that city's most famous cemetery. In the interview, he discusses how that project developed and what he and fellow specialists found. Petr Justa, One-on-One.
I've been working in Old Jewish Cemetery in Prague, the very historic cemetery in Prague, for the last 10 years. And once we found that in New Orleans, the Hurricane Katrina damaged their historic cemetery, St. Louis number 1 and number 2, we contacted the organization in the United States dealing with cemeteries, and we offered them the help to recover and to reconserve and restore the cemetery. Then we visited in April. We did assessment, we did pilot restoration of several tombs and several stones, and we presented what we can do. And now, together with Save Our Cemeteries, with Archdiocese and office in New Orleans, which owns the cemetery. We prepared a large 3-year project for reconstruction of this cemetery.
And how famous or significant a cemetery is St. Louis number 1 and 2?
They are the oldest cemeteries in southern part of United States. There are a lot of very important persons, a lot of musicians, and it's on the list of 100 most famous culture monuments in the United States. Mm-hmm. Comparing to European and particularly Czech cemeteries, it's different because there are, let's say, houses, small houses. These tombs are quite large comparing to Czech graves. And so also the structure is completely different. Once in Prague we have pure stone structures. In St. Louis Cemetery it's always combination between brick structure covered with marble plates and marble decorations. There are also few fully decorated marble tombs, but it's quite rare, about 10%. Because they used almost exclusively Carrara marble imported from Italy. Transport has to be had to be very, very expensive, so only few people could afford it.
In generally, what state would you say that the cemetery was in at this time?
Caused by long-term weathering of the surface of the stone, and we found a lot of damage in marble itself because there was a lack of conservation and preventive conservation, of course, in the last 50 years, let's say. But it's same in Europe, United States, any other country, because there is a large factory production, a lot of fumes in the air, there is air pollution, and marble is a very sensitive material. So there is a reaction between air pollution, acid rain, and the surface of stone. And the result is that the relief, the first layer of the stone is leaving, is going out, and the relief is smaller and smaller and smaller. And after a couple of tens of years, you just feel that there was something, and then it's not readable anymore now.
Just on an off note, one of these cemeteries, the number one, is famous for being the setting for a scene in the cult film Easy Rider.
Of course, yes. for those who don't know where is it, the St. Louis number 2 is about 100 meters out of the St. Louis number 1. It's very close to each other. Also, the age of the tombs are more or less same. It's really very similar in both cemeteries.
Now, would you say that you spend more time abroad on projects like this today or in the Czech Republic?
My main field of interest now is the Iraqi projects that has started in 2004, part of the Czech post-war aid to the Iraq Republic.
And what are some concrete sites that you're focusing on?
We focus to two parts. One is paper restoration, paper conservation, because the first request from the Iraqi part was to save Iraqi National Library and Archive, because was several attacked by Saddam's guards before, during the war and during the last war. And the collection was very heavily damaged. The building was very heavily damaged. So our first project was to help the Iraqi National Library Archive. Second is architecture projects. One was the Minaret al-Hadba in Mosul. And the second was the Ark in Ctesiphon, Ark al-Madain, which is one of the most important historic monument in the world. Part of the old palace from 1st century, and this is the widest span in the ancient world. It's 58 meters. And it means it's a very, very huge structure, and it's heavily endangered now. And the threat that it will collapse is very high now. In times where we visited Iraq, it was closed for foreigners because there were another attacks from insurgents. So we had partners from National Board of Antiquities in Baghdad, and we asked them to collect samples to be investigated in Czech Republic. And now we are preparing the material for conservation, grounding material, and we already prepared samples for bricks to be replaced for the damaged bricks in the site.
What you're saying is that you won't be there personally to oversee the actual physical reconstruction because it's simply too dangerous to be there now.
Yes, it's too dangerous now. We still hope that the situation will change. We are promised every year that it will be better in future. So we hope we will get some new information.
Of course, Iraq is known as the cradle of civilization for Babylon, and I recall seeing in some documentary that Saddam had parts of actual archaeological sites rebuilt according to his own designs. For someone like yourself, that must be an absolute worst nightmare.
Yes, it's a disaster. I saw this place, not personally, but in pictures, and it's very much criticized also from the Iraqi side now. But you know, it's very difficult to change it back now because it's a huge amount of concrete there, and concrete is a very hard material connected with not so hard support, the original support. And once you start to remove the concrete from the site, you will do more damage, even more damage. So it's very difficult decision now if to reconserve it or to leave it. And maybe future generation will find out some good idea how to do this Babylon.
Peter Justa ending that week's one-on-one, and indeed this program. I'm Rob Cameron. You've been listening to Radio Prague. Tune in again soon.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Onde Courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Six heures vingt-sept. Europe, 5930, 7345. 7h30, 7h57, Europe, 9880, 11600. 16h30, 16h57, Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 17485. 18h30, 18h57, Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 13580. 22h, 22h27, Amérique du Nord, 7345, 9415. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français. Pour nous écrire, voici notre adresse. Radio Prague, émission en langue française. Vinohradska 12, Prague 2, code postal 120-99, République tchèque.